Hiya, this is Tim here with the second history podcast of North and South podcasts. I'm here with my mum, Noreen. We're going to be talking about growing up in Bootle after the war from my mum's perspective. We heard my dad's perspective in the last podcast. Younger listeners will learn a lot about life in Bootle after the war. And I think some of the older listeners may be able to remember some of the things my mum is talking about. So, Noreen, when were you born?
The 5th of June, 1950.
1950.
Yeah.
So you are 71 years of age, is that right?
Yes.
Okay, and where were you born?
I was born in Bootle in Barrier Road, the nursing home there.
A nursing home or a hospital, was it?
It's a nursing home.
All right. So you were born after the NHS was set up, unlike my dad. What did your dad do for a living?
He was a joiner.
And where did he serve his time?
Well, it was in Hawthorne Road in Bootle.
So he did his apprenticeship there.
There.
So what did he do later?
He worked in Southport Road.
Yeah.
Doing those houses in Southport Road.
That's one of the main roads in Bootle. And did he work on the ships?
On the ships. Cabin lady used to fit the ships out with cabins, probably like cruisers or something then.
Right. So he fitted out all the ships. It was a big trade back then, wasn't it? The shipping industry. What did your mother do? Did she have a job when you were growing up? Or?
No, my mum never worked because she had 11 children. So she never started work in the post office where I was. When she was about 5, when she started school, and she come in part-time down in the shop part of the post office. There's like a close side to us as well.
Did she work at Aunt Mary down there, Aunt Mary?
Nora worked, the other sister.
Nora. Sister. I remember my nan working in the post office when I was really young. So she got that job. She got a couple of jobs where the children were getting a bit older.
She worked in school as well on the lunchtime assistant.
Yeah, I remember.
With Mrs. Mooney, sister, Mary Mooney. Yeah.
So basically she looked after kids. It was only when the kids got a bit older that she had another job, a little part-time job. I remember her working in the post office and in school, my primary school, which is interesting. But 11 kids.
So she never had a job. She had a big job as it was. And a wonderful job she'd done as well. Yeah. She was very strong as a woman when I think about her.
Yeah, nothing seemed to get to me now. And she was always calm.
No wonder all the girls in our house are strong.
Where did me, Nan and Grandad meet?
In St. Monica's Parish, in the parish hall there. The dances on a Friday night.
And that's one of the main churches in Bootle, isn't it?
Fernhill Road.
Do you know when the war came? What happened to their relationship then? Because they kind of knew of each other.
She met one another before the war, but then my dad had to go away for 7 years of his youth, which he carries on about. 7 years he was away, so my mum didn't, you know, but when they come back, then they met up again, and then they kind of got married.
So my granddad was always angry about his youth being robbed by the war.
Well, he always said that they took the, I won't swear, the 7 years of his youth away from him.
I remember him saying that all the time about, you know, the taking away his youth, and it was a big thing for him, wasn't it? So they met up again after the war, after he'd been away for 7 years, and my granddad died in 2005 and my nan in 2016. And I remember my granddad used to tell me that he threw his uniform and his medals away. He found the Second World War and what happened. It wasn't something to be proud of, necessarily, or to gloat about.
Yeah, we've seen some terrible things, I suppose, and you just go off it all, don't you?
Yeah. The devastation he saw, you know, people dying. I remember speaking to him about this. And he got quite a bad shrapnel wound on his back, didn't he, my granddad? Yeah. Which he had up for the rest of his life. I remember that was...
It didn't bother him too much, I don't think.
So you said my granddad had his best years taken away. He often used to speak to me about the Eastern Front and the USSR, saying that was where the real war took place. And he was very humble about that. And he used to read books about what happened on the Eastern Front, didn't he?
Yeah.
And said that, you know, they were the ones who, you know, really went through it, as it were, to win the war.
Well, he was in the desert, my dad, as well, wasn't he?
Yeah.
and he was going along on all fours, going through the sand with his fingers, trying to find bombs underneath, what they call it?
Landmines,
etc. Yes,
landmines. So he was a sapper, wasn't he?
Yeah, it was quite a dangerous job. That was a terrible job, you know, and you'd be along and his friend had got blown up and things further along the line, and you had to just keep going, you know, and you didn't, maybe you didn't feel like, or you didn't want to, and you had to, so that was a bit dangerous, really.
Do you know me Nan as well? She worked in the artillery.
She worked on the ammunition in Kirby, yeah.
Yeah, during the war too.
So she was making bombs and bullets and all things, you know.
I remember her telling me about that.
On long hours.
What it was like during the Blitz as well, because she was here during the Blitz, and towards the end of her life, she often spoke about the Blitz.
Yeah.
It was like still a deep trauma to her, you know, when she was getting very old and she was losing her mind. To a degree, she used to talk about the Blitz. It obviously left a deep impression with her. When my granddad came back from war, did he feel that he'd missed out on buying a house? Or there was an issue there over buying of houses, wasn't there? That while he'd been away,
while he was working, I think, in Southport Road, and when he realised everyone had the stakes in the ground to buying a house and things, and they were people that didn't probably go the war, I don't think. And it was hard for him to buy a house then, because they were all like bought up more or less.
So he felt.
And then he had like, you've got to save money. Those people probably worked for the council and got the first shout, and you'd been away fighting.
Do you know, I remember him telling me that when he came back, he was working on Southport Road, and if they weren't happy with you, they'd fire you at lunch.
Oh, yeah.
And I remember him thinking, like, we just come back from a war and we're being treated like this.
That's right.
And I think that was, he said that was why, like, people were so pro-Labour, because Labour said, we need to win the peace now. We've won the war.
Yeah.
Etc. So, you know, the war left a deep impression with me nan and me granddad, didn't he? And, you know, they often spoke about it. What was it like then, being one of 11? Was it seven girls and four boys? What were your experiences like as a youngster in that house? What was it like?
Well, it was always, I'd say it was always a happy house in a way.
Yeah.
You know, but there was always a lot going on, singing and dancing and babies and bottles and nappies. And it got a bit hectic at times, to be quite honest. But again, we all just got on with this because you had to, you know. And my mum was like, my dad always worked and always, you know, had to bring money in. And my mum always had to look after us, and she'd done a great job when you think about it. And as you say now, all the education was very important to her.
So you always were told to do well in education?
Yeah.
What, did you have a job when you were growing up? What was your job? Did you have to empty the coal out or something? You were telling
me job in the house. Oh, we all had a job in the house. Mine was emptying, cleaning the fire grate out every morning. Had coal fires then.
Yeah.
The only fire in the house, really. So that was my job, emptying them out.
Mm.
And really, like, other little duties, you know, washing the step and the windowsills and things like that.
What was, like, the culture for working-class people in Bootle at the time? You know, my dad spoke a lot that, like, people used to go to the pubs, but what did the women tend to do? Did they go to the pub as well, or...? How do you remember that?
Well, maybe some, not a lot of women went to the pub, I don't think. It was mostly men.
Mm.
I think they closed at 10:30. Our store doesn't, they might nip out at 9:30 or for the last hour.
Mm.
The men, you know. Maybe some women, but I mean, that was like the big thing, you know. Or like over to Bibby's along Bibby's Lane there. That's right, that club. So my mum and dad used to go there dancing. They were two like lovely dancers, my mum and dad, ballroom dancing. And I wish I'd have took more notice and picked it up from them, and I didn't.
Was social clubs a big thing back then? Not just pubs, but you know, like these like social clubs.
Well, it was a lot going on with all clubs in every corner, really, as well as the pubs on every corner.
So did people not go into Liverpool? You know, like young people today all go into Liverpool, the clubs and pubs there.
Oh, no, it was nothing like that. No, it was only just
local stuff.
Local things, you know.
Yeah. Do you remember your grandmother?
My mum's mum?
Yeah.
Nanny McNicholas, yeah.
And when did she die the year I was born?
1976, she died. September.
So just before, because
she died just as I was pregnant with you, because I wasn't quite sure what was wrong with me at that time when she died, and I realised I was pregnant then with you. So you were born in 77, and she died in September 76, and you were born the following May.
How do you remember me now? My great-grandmother, your nan.
Oh, well, she was a good old stick, like, very inoffensive, just plods on, you know. I just always remember sitting at the table ironing. She was always ironing. And, you know, and she liked to have a bet.
She liked to have a bet, did she, yeah?
Yeah, she used to pick the horses. She used to go round the betting shop, round by the Ainchie pub in Ainchie Road, to the betting shop. All that. I don't mind the betting shop. I think it might have been up an entry, putting a bet on.
Was that like a legal thing or...?
Well, no, I don't think we were supposed to do it. Like.
Did your family have money when you were young? And then my granddad always worked, but...
Well, when I think about it, we were never cold. We were never hungry, considering all of us, you know. And, of course, my dad used to always do like a little thing on the side. He'd make television tables. Yeah. The televisions were coming out. He made television tables out of wood, you know, and like pelmets, curtain pelmets, over the top of curtains in the window. And probably other little bits and pieces, I can't think what. A hanging basket things as well, maybe. But he could make anything really, but he always got a little bit extra money selling them. I think it was 2 and 6 for a table and 1 and 6 for a pelmet.
So he was a skilled worker and he could...
And then he always got a few little extra money that we could probably just keep us going.
Because I remember when I was young, he'd make me a cricket bat and he used to make little cases. And,
Yeah. That was later on, those office cases, you know, for your business, which we have still got them now upstairs.
I've still got some
They're
as well.
Still, I mean, they're just... And they were no nails. It was what you call...
Put it together. I know,
but dovetail. Dovetail, yeah.
Do you know, going back to like what my nan, you know, life for my nan, I mean, what was it like if a woman had a baby out of wedlock? Did people not live together until they were married? And what was the issue, the thing that
Well, it wasn't a thing to do then, you know, it was very, you know. And I think if a girl got herself into trouble, she went away. They said, oh, she's going to work away.
So she just disappeared and moved somewhere else.
Yeah, and she might have come back in later years, but it doesn't matter then, does it? Or she may have gone, whatever she had to do.
What about growing up? Because my nan and grandad had a house on Harris Drive, didn't they, in Bootle?
They lived in Masefield Place first, because everyone come up, younger families, were all more or less the same age with young families coming up to that area. We lived in Masefield Place, and then we moved a 3-bedroom house. Then we moved to a 4-bedroom house in Harris Drive.
Yeah. And because you had a big family. And before Masefield Place, did you live on Leicester Road?
I was a baby, I think, maybe when I was 2 or something.
Right.
Yeah.
But Masefield Place is only a stone's throw from where you ended up on.
Yeah.
On Harris Drive, isn't it? Did you own the house or was it rented?
No, it was rented. It was all rented then. Everyone up over that bridge was all rented accommodation. But they were good houses and still are, which we still have 95 now. Yeah, so they were all
rented.
That's
the house number, isn't it?
Yeah.
When did me nan and grandad buy that house?
Well, then they bought it later on. Probably in 1980, I think.
That late,
yeah? Yeah, it was late. Although it might have been a bit earlier than that, too.
So, I think you remember saying that, or I remember you saying that because your house is so busy and there was bottles and nappies everywhere that you weren't sure whether you wanted to have children yourself initially. And, you know, obviously, you know, that kind of changed, but...
Yeah. Well, I just felt it was just... You couldn't have 5 minutes yourself. It was always hectic. So I just can't... When you're having baby after baby, like my mother, it was always they, like babies, you know, you had to see to them, nappies, bottles, and I thought, I just can't do this. I just want to sit quiet and go on my holidays somewhere.
You know, that's quite a high-pressured household,
yeah.
though, with that
many. Responsibility, yeah.
What was the role of the church then? Like, you know, obviously Catholic family, lots of children.
Well, the church then, it was very important to people, you know, like Catholics. You know, you always went to church. I had to go to church on a Sunday and my mum and dad, you know, my dad used to go to church then early on.
Really?
Yeah. And then, like, my mum would go, or then you could go to church as kids. Because although it wasn't that far down, it wasn't like a case where you couldn't be, you had to go with an adult, you know, you could go to church yourself then and be out.
She went over the road to St. Robert's
Bellarmine's. And still there today now. So in a way, the church was very powerful. They had a lot of power over people, really. And of course, they liked big families, you know, they liked the Muppets to have big families.
Did you feel that the church was an important community thing? Did it bring people together?
Well, in a way, yes, because there's a lot went on in church, like the youth club, Children of Mary, you know.
Those kind of things. Sorry. So there was like support for people through the church.
There was all different things going on. There's lots of things then, you know.
In terms of the, I remember Tom saying that, like, you know, the priest used to take money off me nan. Like, you know, she had 11 kids and the priest would be taking money off.
Well, and then
me
the
nan.
Priest used to come round, I think, every other week on a Friday night or every week. And my mum always left half a crown on the mantelpiece because she knew he was coming, so we went there. And I'm sure that must have been hard at times, but as you say, the priest had come in and taken.
Did you say the priest used to tell you, like, not to rob or... You know, you
well,
said
no,
that
the sacraments, you know, you don't rob from your employer. You don't rob time off your employer because that's a sin. I always think of that in my mind and at the time. Like, and when you think about it, when I went to work and I thought, God.
So, like, you felt like they were almost telling you, like, you have to fit in and do what you're told?
Yeah, well, they're very conservative, aren't they, I'd say. When I think about it now, you were kids and you didn't. But when you look at the church, very conservative. I don't think not many of them vote Labour.
Just going on to the political situation, in terms of politics, how did people view, like, the Labour and the Conservatives when you were young and trade unions, etc.? What were your experience of that growing up?
Oh, well, it was always Labour, really, around Bootle, I'd say, up this end. Like, Simon Marr was the MP then for years.
Yeah.
And we'd come round in a van shouting out the big loudspeaker, you know, vote for Simon Marr. And you'd be coming out on the street, running around after the car, you know, not many cars on the road, and listening to him talk, and, you know, and he was in power for years.
Did you still have, like, a loudspeaker thing?
A loudspeaker, yeah.
So that was, like, part of the identity that you voted Labour,
yeah.
And there was a bit of loyalty, etc.
Yeah.
So I think you said that when you met me dad, he used to speak a lot about politics and stuff, like, how... Did that change the way you thought about things?
Well, yes. Well, he made me think about politics then, you know, in a way.
And what was your view of the Conservatives at this time?
Well, I didn't really know Tories. So all it was Labour, but it wasn't until later on, probably go to school, I was on the school governors. There was a few Labour councils on and Tory ones, you know.
Yeah.
And when you listen to both, I didn't like what Tory had to say. It's all for me.
Yeah.
And they didn't want to, they expected you to make them some money, like on the PTA, you know, and do give it to the school, like for a computer or something like that.
Yeah.
Well, that was like an extra thing, what we'd done a fundraiser for, but they just thought that's what you should be doing as parents, you know, fundraising for things in school. Well, there was only things, like extra things, we wanted to fundraise for.
So,
because that was up to the government to make sure the schools were funded properly.
Yeah, that's good. Hearing that option, because I know that certainly when I grew up, I was quite shocked when I first went somewhere and saw, like, Vote Conservative signs, because I was brought up in Bootle. I went to university at Stoke. And I remember driving through Southport, seeing Vote Conservative signs and being, like, really flabbergasted because...
Yeah.
No one voted Conservative, you know. When I went to university, meeting Conservative voters was also a big shock, you know, because I'd never really been exposed to their ideas. So I think that, you know, in Bootle, it was quite restricted.
So I think it rubbed off on you, Claire and Tim, yourself. It rubbed off on you, the politics that was going on in this house, listening to the news and debating politics in this house, and both of you... can think the right way as far as I'm concerned. Might you know how to think?
We were certainly told to challenge things as we were growing up.
Yes.
Yeah, we were certainly raised in a political home, and I remember my dad's political posters on the
walls. Because then when you were born in 77, Thatcher come to power then. And I just thought that was the most awful thing, probably one of the most awful things in my life, that the Tories got back in power and she was their leader, and it was just awful. Taking the milk off the kids for a start, and you can go on and on for hours and hours about what you've done. But that's the way the Tories, that's the way they were, and that's why the Muppets have got to see through it. You're voting against their own interest, voting Tory to me.
Yeah.
And so, yet they do it.
So for you, like working class, it was clear, like you voted Labour, and I mean nowadays,
well,
working class people are as likely to vote Conservative.
Well, you all think there's someone now, I don't know what it is with them, but to me, emptiness.
Yeah.
Voting against your own interest.
Do you know, in terms of...
I understand someone loaded voting Tory. I understand that, and then Marg and the rest of them. I understand them voting Tory. The MP, Marg.
Yeah. Oh, Jacob Rees-Mogg, yeah.
Yeah. I can't say his full name, it makes me sick. So the likes of them, I understand them, that they're defending themselves because they want to make more and more money. Greed at the top. They don't want to give anybody anything else. Those people, but I don't understand people, working class people in Bootlord around, that think the right way is to vote Tory.
Yeah, yeah.
Or Brexit.
Well, that's certainly how I was raised.
So I just wanted my two can see through all the spin.
Yeah.
That's the main thing. One of my highlights of my life, my two know which way to think.
In terms of the economics, you said that my granddad was a joiner and you had a little bit more than some of the other families. Did you feel that you had like a happy upbringing? You've said that it was a happy house, but generally speaking, did you feel fortunate growing up?
Very fortunate. We were never hungry. Like my mum used to say, she was hungry going to bed as a kid, and the sisters, but we always had something to eat, although there was loads of, there was always a pan of scouse on. That was the thing. Everything vegetable all went in a pan of scouse. Every single day we had something to eat, and although there was only a fire, we were always warm. We were never, you know. So in a way, I'd say that was two basic things that are very important growing up.
Do you know, you were saying that my nan went to bed hungry. I've never heard, she never told me that in it, you know, when she spoke to me, but she grew up during the Depression. So obviously after the war, maybe with my granddad's job as well, despite having so many children, you know, you did have more than me nan had as well. And you know, you'd like to think that people have got more than the kids, although do you reckon that could change in the future? Did you ever get like vouchers or family support or anything?
Got family allowance. Everyone got family allowance then,
so everyone got it regardless of your situation.
In them days everyone got family allowance, and used to get baby vouchers. You know, everyone who had a baby would get them vouchers for baby food. And cod liver oil and the orange juice. If anyone's listened to that, they know what that is. That's my age. Cod liver oil and the orange juice you get from the chemist.
What was it like at Christmas? Did you get much at Christmas? Or?
Oh, well, it was a bit hard going at Christmas. I suppose, no, but we always got like a big present, a biggish one. I'd say you got a doll.
Yeah.
And you got like a tangerine and an apple in your sock. And
so you got fruit at Christmas because you didn't get much fruit at other times of the year.
Well, no, it was one of those things. You'd always got a bit of fruit at Christmas.
So that was like a tradition.
So you always had a doll. I always, like, you know, you had a doll or something like that.
Did you say that you lived near the field? How important was it having a field nearby?
Oh, that was good because right onto the back was a big field. Three lots of fields going back. And we used to play there all day, run round making bombies and, you know,
bonfires,
dens and all this, that and the other. It was always like something to do, play it round, you know.
Yeah. Did you say that you used to sell the jam jars on the wood or...?
Well, my dad was a joiner. He'd always bring bits of wood home each night. We throw a lot on the fire.
Yeah.
That was great. We used to be all keeping warm with the wood on, all odd bits. And then what was there? We used to chop the wood up into sticks. Tie string round it. My dad made a trolley for us, you know, four wheels on, and we used to pile all the wood up. We should have started a business, really. Pile the wood on and collect jam, and a box at the end to get the jam jars and put them in. because they used to fall off and break. So we had a box to put them in. We used to knock and say, do you want to buy any wood for sixpence or threepence? And imagine what threepence is today. And have you got any jam jars? So they might have bought two little butts of wood because everyone had a coal fire.
Yeah.
So they those sticks, kindling yeah. sticks, they'd start the fire yeah. off then. And then, so that was a good little, that used to keep us busy as well.
Was that like your pocket money or?
Oh, my mum would never take that off us. That was like, we might buy a few little sweets and just sit in the yard and eat all the sweets, you know. Not all of them, there wasn't that much, but we'd have a little bit, but that was our little thing of keeping us busy and also selling things and going around it. To Ennerdale.
Ennerdale shops on the, there's a street there with some shops.
And then you might say it's 6 months, they say, oh, I'll give you threepence for it. And like them people, when I think about it, saying, give us threepence, and you say, oh, okay, we were just kids and just took threepence. But just sometimes they come after us and say, oh, there's the other threepence. I think there was two threepences in a sixpence.
What was winter like? Because, you know, it's cold now, isn't it? I don't know if people can hear the wind howling. But what was winter like before central heating? And what's your memories of winter growing
well,
up?
Well, the house was always cold in a way. When I say we were always warm, because when you went to bed, you were warm because you had all big blankets on. But,
yeah.
It was kind of quite cold, really.
Yeah.
You know, there'd be ice on the windows and... Yeah. You know, you'd be scared to put your foot on the floor because you'd be thinking, oh no, you know, the cold would go through, yeah, but...
What was bath time like in your house? Because if you had
Well, we always got washed in the sink. We'd all have to sit on the chair, maybe 7 years there, and you'd be getting washed one by one, your turn next, up on the sink. And my dad would wash you, really. And then the next thing, when you're finished, you'd throw the flannel at your stomach like that and say, right, you're finished. You knew then it was finished. You'd jump down. And the next one to jump up. So that's how it was at first. Although we did have a bath, but we...
That was quicker, didn't
it? Yeah, it was quicker and we just all got done.
What was school like? You went over to St. Robert Bellarmine to five, didn't you?
Yeah.
How many were in your class? And...
Oh, they were always big classes. You were lucky if you got in at five. Now they go to school at four, but you were lucky. I remember someone in our year had twins and only one of them could go in. There was no room for the other twin till they found, you know, later on, months after. Oh, no, they were always big classes, 40, 45 in a class and, you know.
What were the teachers like?
Oh, well, you just think of them a bit old-fashioned and a bit harsh, really.
Mm.
But I suppose it's they're like superior to you and you just think of them being like that, don't you? Yeah.
And did you...
But you only always had the one teacher for everything, or everything.
Yeah.
That was your class teacher, and you'd done all different subjects with that one teacher.
Did you like doing the work and stuff, or was it boring to you as a youngster?
No. No, didn't, you know, you just had to get on with it, didn't you? And then you'd be getting called out, you know, the class you're next, and the teacher taught you for 5 or 10 minutes, so you're getting on,
you go
and sit down the next thing. So that was up and down, but then when you're on the front and it was your turn, you'd run back and go to the back and hope she didn't notice or him. And then you'd be saying, no, I haven't seen you, and you'd be running around, so everyone would be changing the seat, you know, because you didn't want to go out to her, like.
What were the dinners like at school?
Oh, the dinners were gay. The dinners was on site at the top by the railway bridge in Harris Drive. And the dinners were cooked on the premises then.
Really?
Miss Daly was the head cook. Miss Hopwood and Miss Lee. Three of them. They're the names. And a lot of people remember them names. And the dinners were lovely. They were always very hot. Always enough. And sometimes you'd get seconds. You know, if there was some over, you'd go and get a little bit of... For seconds, so it was great the dinner time.
I remember when there was seconds, it was like a real, you were dead excited if you got seconds.
Yeah.
I remember the dinner centre being up by the railway.
We should have photographs, you see, Tim, that's terrible.
Really. And then all those buildings were level.
The Horsier block, it was called, a Horsier block.
But then when Sybil was in charge later on, the meals got delivered. But they were nice meals.
They were still all right. It's just that you just remember them things of everything piping hot. You could smell the dinner in school class thinking, oh, I wonder how long it will be now before we can go up, you know, just for your dinner.
Where did you go to secondary school?
St. Monica's, the old fever hospital in Fernhill Road.
So it used to be a place where people would go with tuberculosis?
Yes,
or?
A fever hospital, yeah.
Wow, so it was like a public building that was then used as a school.
Yeah.
You left school at 15. Yeah. Again, I know my dad said that's what, if you were from Bootle, you tended to just leave at 15 and try and get a job. Was that kind of expected of you? Or?
Oh, yeah. I think at 15, you just didn't think of university. I don't think we knew anything about university then. So we just got a job then. Well, you can get a job anywhere then, you know.
And where did you work first?
Where did I work first? I worked in Tesco's.
Mm. And did you like it then?
Oh, Tesco's was good. I was there for ages there in there.
And did you get a bit of a lucky break? I think you recall you said someone spotted you.
Oh, yeah, the post office postmaster, Mr. McGough.
Yeah.
I went, he called down to and said he's looking for someone to start to train up, and he thought I'd be a good little catch, you know. So that's how I just moved out then. I just moved up to the post office.
Now, I've worked with you in the post office at times, and I remember like seeing how good you were with the public, and you were dead positive. You never let like people get to you or bother you, even if they were being a bit off. And is that something you think Mr. McGough saw in you? Or?
Oh, I think so, yeah. You had to just listen to people, and you didn't tell any business. That was important. You couldn't tell anybody's business there. But that's probably what he's just giving you a break, I think.
No, but...
Because he knew me mum with all the kids and all that business, you know.
But I've seen you work. I know you come across really well. And I think Claire said as well, when I worked with you, she said, how good to me mum at a job, you know, just the way you are and the way you speak to people. You know, a lot of confidence and stuff.
Oh, yeah. No, you can't be. You have to, you know, it's common sense to him, isn't it? And then, of course, people do shout and get on your nerves, but you just have to just try and get through it and try and sort it out. Like every day in life, you have to try and do things like that without shouting.
In terms of the school thing, you've told me a bit about the bridge, like north of the bridge, up that way and south of the bridge. What does that mean in your mind, like different sides of the bridge? Because we've got a railway embankment with the bridge here, and it kind of splits this community in two, as it were. What did that mean to you?
Well, all over up on over the bridge were all new houses, and all young families come at the same time, but they were all rented accommodation.
Yeah.
Right? And, I mean, that's fine. It was nice, everyone, all the kids and everything going on. But on this side of the bridge, it wasn't until later on, probably when I went to the post office in a way, I realised that this side of the bridge here, can I say the name, Gardner Avenue, the likes, those people were buying the homes down this side, rented up there, most people buying houses this side, and always found one or two children. They never had like up over the bridge where they might have had seven or eight. They just had a small family, and they always, like, most of them always thought they worked in the town hall. They always got a job in the town hall, like collecting the rent. They used to come round collecting the rent as well at that point, you know. Your fella would call to the
so
house.
You felt that those people up there were a certain type, big families, lower paid jobs.
It's just when you're in the post office and you start looking at these people, the way they dealt.
So you
these were coming in for family allowances, not really saving. These people
on this side of the bridge
were investing in different things, where I thought, what is this?
And so you're seeing that in the post office, and you're going, wait there, what's going on? So these people down here, they have less children, they have better jobs in the corporation, the council, and you see that they're saving money.
Yeah.
And did that open your eye to that kind of thing, or how did that change the way you...
Well, I just thought, well, I'm going to get an investment book like they had, a grey one.
Yeah.
And I thought I'll open one of them and start saving myself. So in a way, you know. But Mr. McGough was very good, the postmaster, because he was kind of tell you, say, to do this, that and the other, you know.
So he offered you advice. You were in the post office for a long time, weren't you?
45 years.
Now, in that time, you saw some changes, decimalisation.
Oh, yeah.
And computers were introduced. Yeah. And throughout all that, you basically saw everything. But I remember they took your dinner hour away as well, didn't they? How did that come into...
We used to close 1 to 2, or 1 to 1/4 past 2, I think.
Yeah.
And then it was like, wasn't later on, years, that you had to be open, to, you know, the whole day. You couldn't close for your lunch.
Yeah.
So you'd have to be open then, that hour. And but if there was two of you, one could just maybe go and have a sit-off. where we'd work it between ourselves, and the other one would serve, and if you got busy, you'd come out and serve. But that's just the way everything goes, isn't it? That's the way business people work. They want to grind you into the ground, don't they? Instead of giving you an hour for your dinner. But we know all about that.
What was the pay like throughout your time in the post office with decimalisation and computing and all that? Did pay ever change, or was it always roughly like the same?
Well, it used to be supposed to get a pay rise every year then. Everyone did, I think, in a way. Mm. That was one of those things, you know, you got a little pay rise each year. But I wasn't too bad in the post office. You did get a pay deal. You did pay me more in that post office and bits and pieces like.
Yeah. Was it a highly paid job in any way? Particularly,
well, you see,
there
was a sub office. If you went to the Crown office, you probably got more there, like the Strand and like a main office.
Yeah.
But I was only training there, but anyway, I never left there because, you know, I just went to different offices then. Well, when you had kids, I just went part-time then as well, you know, so it wasn't...
Right. So then you had kids, you had me and Claire. Before that, you met me dad. Is it true that you met her in Everton game?
I was Everton game, that's right. When we went to the Everton match, yeah, in the boys' pen. The boys' pen, I think, was threatened to get in or something, or 6 months. Oh, there was a big game on Ubby Night and something.
How old were you when you
first Well, I was probably
met.
Still at school then, probably 14 or something. Because in the boys' pen, you had to be kids to get in. So we were still at school, I think.
And did you meet somewhere else after that? Or?
And then we met, used to just have a little chat in there, but then I didn't see him for years then. I think he said he wanted to go away and be like a brown father on the missions, which I thought, oh, that's what he must want to do. And then I met him at...
Was it English Martyrs?
English Martyrs, yeah. At the youth club, at a dance there, you know. And then he still went away, I think, after that. He went on the trawlers, didn't he? He wanted to go on the trawlers, and that was a few years then, you know.
When did you get married?
At 71.
And... When did you buy this house?
Well, we lived in, there was a house in the post office.
And you rented that, didn't you?
We rented that. Mr. McGoughter said you can have this, you know, till you save up or you get a house, just stay. It was a big house, it was great, really. So we were there actually for 5 years, I think.
Mm.
And so, then this house come up and then we got the house here.
Right. My first memory is you going to help my sister and I was quite traumatised, crying. And I remember my nan trying to calm me down. And you and my dad were driving off. That's my first memory. So that would have been 1980.
Yeah.
2nd of Jan, 1980.
That's right.
It's not often you can actually give the date of your first memory, but I think that was it.
Yeah. Well, you must have been only young, Tim. 2, 3.
Yeah. I was 2 and a half when Claire was born. But that's my first
like
memory.
Yeah.
And I was lucky because we were just opposite the school. We used to run across the road to school. What do you think were your biggest achievements in life?
Oh, God. Probably the job in the post office.
That changed the way you saw the world?
Yeah, I think so, yeah. That was... And then when I had you two.
Yeah.
Because when I went to the nursery, you were, all of a sudden, you were helping out and being in charge of things. And, you know, you took positions on the committee and then you go to school and then you went on the PTA and on the governors. All those things you could possibly do, I was on in school. Because I always knew what was going on everywhere in school.
So the post office to you wasn't just a job, a skilled job. It was you saw the world differently. And then when me and Claire were born, getting involved in the youth groups, the PTAs, the governors, that changed.
Oh, yeah. Well, you just knew there was something else going on, didn't you? And it was also, it was while you were young and I was interested in your education, you just knew what you had to know what was going on. And the same it went on till you went to Savio as well as on the governors up there.
Yeah.
Till you both were there, till, you know, you left. Because I felt, well, they wanted me to stay on there, but I didn't want to. Because, well, I'd done that. I'd seen you through the school and you need a break at that point. There was other things going on.
Yeah. How important was it when you bought a house? Was that, like, quite an important thing at the time?
Oh, well,
I mean, it's a big thing now, but what was it like then?
Well, you do. I never thought I'd get a house. You know, you just think that's beyond you to buy a house.
Yeah.
So that was like an achievement in a way. You know, that you bought a house.
How much was this house when you got it? Because I think
it's 5,000. I think 5,500.
And did you have a deposit or?
Oh well, we were saving all the time. We were saving. I was in the post office and I used to put my money in the grey book, the investment book, every week.
Yeah.
You got paid money weekly.
I remember me and Claire getting one of them when we were little.
Oh, well, I tried to introduce you. You've got to save.
Yeah.
And this is the way you start.
Yeah. I think to be honest with you, I think me and Claire always knew that, like, growing up, credit cards weren't really a solution to things and saving was important. I think that was important for us growing up.
Yeah.
That we know those things. So, did you get a deposit from my nan and granddad, or because you were one of them?
No, because we saved up. Although I did say to my mum, did you have any money for us? Because I know people used to play football, did we, and the gyro. And of course, those parents were giving them money for the deposit, quite a lot. They all got deposits off their parents. And I thought, oh gosh, you know, isn't that funny? So I thought, I'll ask my mum, did she have any money? And she said, oh, Noreen, I haven't got that kind of money. Because she still had younger children then, don't forget. And so I just thought, well, you know, it's so hard. So we had to do it ourselves in the end. So we did it, but, you know, it wasn't easy, like, not as easy as some of them got.
I remember, I mentioned it when I spoke to my dad as well, about when I remember us getting central heating. And that was a thing, you know, getting central heating. Because I remember when I was a kid, going to bed, it used to be cold, and you'd put the little bar fire
on.
To just take the edge off. Mm-hmm. What was it like when you moved in here? Was it quite basic, this house? Or?
It was very old. It was an old lady who lived in here. So it was, the sink was on bricks. And there was a lot to do, really, on the windows. We had to do everything and the wiring and...
Do you know, you and my dad still today take a lot of pride in the house, and I know that, like, there's generational differences in the way people view a house, but do you think that's because you've always had to modernise it and keep it up?
Oh, well, it's important to keep the house when any jobs need doing. And, of course, you like, it's your home, so you like a bit of comfort, don't you, you know?
Yeah.
You want to sit down and enjoy it.
I remember people used to, like, scrubbing the street when I was a kid, and I think it is after the war, people really cherished what they had, didn't they? And I think people today aren't quite
See,
like
don't
that.
Forget, and I don't know anything about the war. I was after that then.
Yeah.
So it doesn't really, you know, affect me like that.
I remember the car was, did you get a car fairly young? Because I remember, ever since I was younger, I remember that green car. Do you remember when you got your first car?
The Deutsche. We were in the post office then. I think we just got married, so it must have been 72. We got the car, our first car, you know.
Did you have that for years? Because I remember that green car.
Well, probably you had it for 3 years or something. We did change the car a lot. Like, we always change it now, at least every 2 years.
If you could live your life again, what would you do differently?
I don't think I'd probably do anything differently. I haven't mentioned Des. It's such an important part of your life, but
your dad said that. I think this is a generational
thing. But I don't think you'd change anything, because as long as you just keep well now, and everyone's well and looking after themselves, well, you know.
That's what's important. What are the biggest changes you've seen? I know you mentioned Thatcher and the Tories. Was a bad thing. And I know that, you know, you got involved in the PTA and the governors. I remember you having a speech, talking about having a speech or something that was a big thing for you when you were young.
When I was on the in the playgroup.
Yeah.
And I was in the chair then, and at the end of the year, you had to do a speech, you know, have an AGM.
Yeah.
And I just thought, oh no, I put off being that in chair for years because I thought I can't stand up and talk.
Yeah.
And that. But, and then 1 year I thought, what the hell? And I just done it. And then I had to do it, and I just, you know, done my own speech, and I'd ran the meeting and all that, so it was fine. But that done a lot for me, in as much that I felt that
confidence thing.
Confidence thing, yeah.
I know that when we were young, summer fairs and jumble sales used to be big. And they were a big money raiser for the school. I know you've already mentioned that
once a month we held
an event. I know that, like, you've said that you thought, why are we having to raise money for basics in the schools? But I remember they were big events and they were regular, weren't they?
Oh, yeah. We used to make quite a lot of money, me and Delia, for the school. But it wasn't for books and pens. That's up to the government to provide them. This was extra things, like doing a trip out and things like that. It was always extra things, not a basic anything.
So you didn't like the fact that you might be asked to provide for some of those basics because you didn't think that the PTA should have
Well, I don't, yeah, maybe once or twice they asked for money from them, but I said, well, no, it's not. It's got to be something for the children.
Right.
Like a computer.
How important was the running club to you? Because when I was growing up, you used to do a lot of running and Liverpool running.
Oh, well, but we were always in the Keep Fit, what's it called it then?
Yeah.
Thursday afternoon in school hall, that was another thing going on. We always had a class there. I used to go three or four classes then, different places. Well, that was keeping fit. I was only probably 30 then, 27, wasn't I?
Mm.
30. Well, you're just young and you just keep fit, don't you? And then the running club and that, of course, that was a great thing. I ran a few marathons.
Yeah.
So that was like, you know.
We used to travel to go to like
events. We used to go all over. We were in a running club, Liverpool Running Club.
Yeah.
And we used to travel all over, you know.
I remember going to watch you run and sometimes going on a coach
We'd go on like a day out and I'd run, but it was like just keeping fit, I should say, you know, it was an interest.
In terms of gender roles, I know this is something I've mentioned before, but like, what do you think was the difference between growing up as a young man, growing up as a young woman in Bool? I know you said people just kind of got on with things, the women stayed at home, but, you know, you said going to the post office opened to your eyes. Did you ever think about gender roles and what women or men were supposed to do and think about, you know, whether that was right or not in your youth?
Well, probably our Joan. Like, she was like a woman's liver then, wasn't she? Our Joan. And she used to be saying a lot of things about women, women's rights and all this, you know. And all the fellas get the jobs and the fellas think they're in charge and all this business. And it makes you think that, well, women can do this job as well, just as good as men.
Mm.
So, you know, I think Claire, like, knows that, had to listen to a lot of that from our Joan, which was good.
So women's liberation.
Said, instead of a doll, Claire, I'm going to get you a scientist set or a doctor's set because leave the dolls alone.
Yeah.
That's what you need to be playing with.
Joan was very passionate because Joan went to work in
Mozambique
with the socialist government there, didn't she?
Yeah.
So she went to uni and she learned about women's liberation in the 70s, the 60s and 70s. She mentioned that to Claire, but did that have an impact on you? Had you heard that kind of thing before?
Well, not really. RJ was the first one. I think she was 13. She didn't pass the 11. Well, not that she didn't pass. She never had a chance to pass. It didn't suit them. This is where I'm talking about both sides of the bridge, Tim.
Yeah.
These people over this side in Gardner, they were the ones that went to the schools, passing the 11 plus. By the way, they passed load of, I'm trying not to swear. And so they all went to them schools and all up there over there, the rented accommodation, all went to the local, you know, school.
I said that to my dad, though, because my dad's really intelligent. So, like, it's like, even if you were intelligent, you had your card marked earlier.
Oh, yeah. No, this is where the church and the school come into play, in as much as they started picking who was going to them schools, and you just had to go along to the secondary modern, the fever hospital, like a joke.
Do you feel that labelled you for the rest of your life, that kind of thing?
Well, you just used to look and you just knew it was so unfair. And those few in school and in church all dictating the show to you and they're talking about, you know, being a good person and, you know, going to church. And I understand all that, yeah. But, you know, when they're picking people out and you don't think of it at the time, you're only 11 and 12, but, you know, later on in years, this is when I got in the post office again and I realised all them people, you know, with two kids all went to the grammar schools.
Yeah. That's quite profound, that, because they're trying to reintroduce, they still do it in some parts of the country, they're trying to reintroduce.
And I'm just thinking about women then as well, I'm sorry. Just thinking about women, the best thing ever for women was the birth pill.
Yeah.
Because then women were in control of their bodies, so they weren't having kid after kid after year, yeah. Next year and the year. They had control of the family. And of course the church didn't like that, but why? I mean, you're supposed to have loads of kids and you can't cope with it all. Hard. So, and then you don't get a chance to go to Martimus Recordio or Seafield because there's a load of you. Because the nun thinks you can't afford the uniform, which I know for a fact that got said. You might be able to afford the uniform. And so you didn't go. Oh, well, the promoting big families, every one of us should have gone then. If there's promoting big families,
yeah.
The 11 of us should have gone. Because we're doing the church, that's what they wanted.
I think that's a good point to finish with, that kind of summary of what it was like back then in terms of you're from here, you're from there, and that impact that it had on your life. Thank you very much for your time, Mum.
Well, I've enjoyed that, and I hope it's useful in another, 250 years' time. So people are listening to this.
I'm sure they will. If you're listening to this in the
20... Also, I hope you find out who killed JFK.
If you're listening to this in the 23rd century, that was me mum saying that. I hope you found it useful too. Thank you very much.